Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, January 9th, 2024. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. In local news headlines, Dubuque County event will create walking sticks out of invasive wood species. A Dubuque County conservation event will help eradicate an invasive species while creating a carved wooden walking stick. Woodworking with invasives will be held from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. February 3rd at E.B. Lyons Nature Center at Mines of Spain State Recreation Area, 8991 Bellevue Heights Road, according to an online announcement. Participants will help collect buckthorn and invasive species from woods around the E.B. Lyons Center before heading inside to carve a walking stick. The event is intended for ages 12 and older. Participants should bring their own work gloves. Cost is $10. 5 years in, Dubuque County Sheriff's Department confident in take-home vehicle policy. The practice allows deputies to improve response time to emergency calls. Story by John Cruz at thmedia.com. Deputies with the Dubuque County Sheriff's Department say a policy implemented 5 years ago has improved both morale and reduced response times. The Dubuque County Board of Supervisors in 2018 approved a request by Sheriff Joe Kennedy to allow deputies to take their vehicles home at the end of their shifts. Deputies living throughout the county previously had to drive into Dubuque to pick up their patrol vehicles, but the updated policy allowed them to start their shift right from their home. Kennedy said the intention of the program was to reduce the time deputies spent traveling to start their shifts, which for some deputies totaled an hour and extra drive time per shift. You had anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half per shift where deputies were not out on the road because we were going through the shift change process, Kennedy said. The change has resulted in a significant improvement to response times for emergency calls that come in during shift change times, as many deputies now are able to begin their shifts already on their patrol routes instead of having to travel from Dubuque to their patrol route at the start of their shift. We had a person who went into cardiac arrest, and a deputy who was coming from his house was able to get to the victim's house in probably within 5 minutes, Kennedy said. If they were coming from the law center, that response time would easily have been 20 minutes. Allowing deputies to start and end their shifts from their own residences isn't unique to Dubuque County. In fact, when the Dubuque County Sheriff's Department implemented the policy, it was the outlier among other county law enforcement departments in not already having such a policy for years. Dale McCulloch, sheriff for Crawford County, Wisconsin, said deputies in his counties have been able to take their patrol vehicles home for as long as he has worked at the department, which will be 33 years this year. It's so much easier to do it this way, McCulloch said. For as long as I've been here, it's been done that way. Ryan Kramer, patrol captain for the Dubuque County Sheriff's Department, said the adoption of the policy was readily welcomed by deputies and has helped to improve their ability to respond to emergency calls in their patrol areas. Before then, the response was always coming out of Dubuque, so if something happens in Dyersville, it's going to be time-consuming to get there, Kramer said. It's really improved response times for situations like that. Kennedy said the policy also has improved morale for deputies as they spend less time each week driving to and from Dubuque. At the end of their shift, they don't need to drive to Dubuque to put their stuff away, Kennedy said. They can get home sooner and spend more time with their families. However, the shift policy required an investment by the county in order to be implemented. Prior to the policy's approval, the Sheriff's Department had a fleet of 11 patrol vehicles, but the shift required all deputies to have their own vehicle. With 24 road patrol deputies, the county had to add 13 new patrol vehicles to its fleet over the past 5 years. Kennedy said those vehicle purchases have ranged from $35,000 to $45,000 each. When the policy was approved in 2018, the county agreed to pay for the program through money forfeited to the department during investigations. At the time, $35,000 from the county's forfeiture fund went towards purchasing the additional vehicles along with additional debt service funds. Dubuque County Supervisor Harley Potthoff, a retired road patrol captain with the Dubuque County Sheriff's Department, said that investment was well worth it as he believes it has made the county safe. I definitely think it has paid off, he said. If there is a call, they can be right on it. For medical emergencies, quick response times are paramount. Love That Laughs, Teamwork, mutual respect, key to 61 years together for a Dubuque couple. John and Mary Lou Mouse were married on December 29, 1962 at St. Peter's Catholic Church in Hoka, Minnesota. Story by Michelle London, michelle.london@thmedia.com. It was September of 1961 and John Mouse, a native of New Albany, Iowa, was on the dance floor balcony of the Avalon Ballroom in La Crosse, Wisconsin, surveying the girls with his friend Dale Whalen. Dale says, "I see a table of girls down there," said John, now 83. "I know Mary Lou. I'll dance with her," I said. "I'll take the one with the brown dress on," he said. "Oh, that's Mary Lou." John beat Dale to the punch and asked Mary Lou Horahan, who grew up across the Mississippi River in Hoka, Minnesota, for a dance. She was attractive, and I thought she looked very interesting. Meanwhile, Mary Lou was trying to figure out how she knew the handsome young man. "I was still trying to figure out who he was," said Mary Lou Mouse, now 82. He said, "Mary Lou, can I have this dance?" Then he said, "How are things in Hoka?" I'm thinking, who is this guy? She hadn't met him before, but John did use information from their mutual friend to talk his way into a dance. John returned to the Avalon the following weekend, and so did Mary Lou. "We've been dancing ever since," she said. On New Year's Eve 1961, John shared his New Year's resolution for 1962 with Mary Lou. "He told me he was going to marry me before the end of the year," she said. The couple married on December 29, 1962 at St. Peter's Catholic Church in Hoka and recently celebrated 61 years together. They have 8 children, Julie Haas, Joe, Marianne Mouse, Mark, Jim, Jean Beautemps, Mike and Matt. Jim passed away in 2021. The couple also have 21 grandchildren and 11 great-grandchildren. John had joined the Army the year he and Mary Lou got married, serving as an intelligence coordinator. They lived in Texas, Germany. "First 5 years were like a honeymoon," Mary Lou said. "Marriage was a permanent thing to us. We were away from our family, and we just had to rely each other to rely on." Jean of Dubuque said that when she got engaged, she asked her parents for their best marital advice. "My dad said they agreed never to put each other down or make fun of each other," she said, "and I have never seen either of them do that." After the military, John, who had cut short his college studies at Loras College, wanted to return to school. That meant a move to Dubuque, where he and Mary Lou raised their family and continued to live. John began working for the Dubuque Police Department while he was still a political science major, collecting money from parking meters. He took the civil service exam and began his career in law enforcement in 1966 as a patrol officer. He was appointed chief of police in 1985 and retired in 2001. "He retired on a Friday," Julie Racine, Wisconsin, said, "and on Monday, he started teaching criminal justice classes at Southwest Tech in Fenimore, Wisconsin." John was coordinator for the police science program at Southwest for many years and continued teaching there both full-time and part-time until 2020. Mary Lou describes herself as a professional volunteer. She also worked as the senior program travel coordinator at First National Bank, later U.S. Bank, until her retirement in 2001. "I started out with the kids' schools. Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, that kind of thing," she said of her volunteer work. Mary Lou would go on to volunteer with the Freedom Crisis Line, the Discovery Shop, and the United Way, among others. She was also a Sisters of the Presentation associate and served on the Presentation Lantern Center board for 9 years. She continues to volunteer whenever and wherever she can. "I don't think you ever retire from volunteerism," she said. "There's so much to do. Find something you're interested in. If you don't like it, try something else." Together, John and Mary Lou have volunteered with pre-marriage preparation programs at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. John is also involved in prison ministry at Anamosa State Prison, plays guitar in the Older and Bolder Band, and was often Mary Lou's right-hand man during those travel programs. "John was never a man of many words," Julie said, "but when he spoke, people listened. So he would be the one to sit and talk with someone who was alone. It's just another example of how my parents really are a team." John also completed a bike ride from Lake Superior in Canada to Ciudad Acuña, Mexico, after his retirement, doing it in a series of legs over a few months. "I had a friend who'd ridden the length of the Mississippi," he said, "and I thought about doing that, then thought, why not make it international?" The Mouse siblings all agree on two things. They never saw their parents argue, and they are each the favorite child. "They will never tell us who the favorite is," Marianne of Dubuque said. "Every single one of us is secretly, sir, we are at it." Joe of Sherrill, Iowa said his parents were never on different pages. "If Mom said no, Dad backed her up, and vice versa," he said. "They were always united." As an adult, Mark of Dubuque, has realized how impressive it is that his parents were so patient in raising 8 children. They were fair, firm, and consistent, he said. They never disciplined out of anger. Mary Lou said that besides John's good looks, it was his values that first attracted her to him. Family and faith were very important to him, she said. He was always calm and quiet, which was a good balance for me, and it still is. Along with their mutual values, John said it has always been how they have treated each other that has been the key to their successful partnership. We always treated each other with respect, he said, and Mary Lou has always been worthy of that respect. Know a long married couple? Love That Lasts is a series highlighting local couples who have been married to at least 50 years. To nominate a couple to be featured in this series, contact reporter Michelle London at 563-588-5655 or michelle.london@thmedia.com. Be sure to include the couple's names, city of residence, contact information, how long the two have been married, and their wedding date. Friends of the Cascade Public Library to hold annual meeting January 17th. Deadline, Cascade, Iowa. The community is invited to the annual meeting of the Friends of Cascade Public Library. The event will be held at 5:30 p.m. January 17th, Cascade City Hall, 320 First Avenue West. The meeting will include a discussion of 2024 activities. NAMI Dubuque to hold seminar in Dyersville. Dateline, Dyersville, Iowa. NAMI, the National Association, a National Alliance on Mental Illness, Dubuque, will hold a free seminar for families caring for a loved one with brain health issues. The event will be held from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. February 10th at James Kennedy Public Library, 320 First Avenue East, according to an online announcement. The seminar's topics include treatment, recovery, diagnosis, communication strategies, and crisis preparation. Register online at namidubuque.org/family/friends or by emailing barb@namidubuque.org. Program on birds to be held in Guttenberg. Dateline, Guttenberg, Iowa. 2 free classes about birds and wildlife will be offered this month in Guttenberg. Katie Ibsen, founder of Avian Connections, will teach attendees facts about native birds and how to help local wildlife. 2 birds also will also be in attendance. Help teach the course will be held at the Guttenberg Public Library, 603 South 2nd Street, according to an online event announcement. The classes are free, open to the public, and begin at 1:30 p.m. and 3 p.m. on January 17th. Here's a letter to the editor. City must do better to maintain Eagle Point Park. This letter is from Art Rakusik from Augusta Court in Dubuque. Winter is once here again. Eagle Point Park is closed for the season. We are writing to express our concerns over the condition of this nationally recognized historical place. Eagle Point Park is literally going to seed. The park looks mismanaged and abandoned with tree overgrowth along the Riverview fence line, weeds, and downed trees. Is there a plan to remove standing dead trees? Is this how a National Registered Historical Place should be maintained? The no-mow sections look awful. How many years do we need to wait to admit that the Natural Habitat Growth Project has failed? Where have all the picnic tables gone? Where are the picnickers supposed to sit? Is there a plan to add more? If you build them, they will come. What is the point of an entrance fee if they don't intend to reinvest in this park? Year over year, the park appears to get less and less of the resources available. It's time to resurrect the city's focus on this park. Apparently, there's a plan in place to build 3 more city parks. The park services have already overextended themselves. If we can't maintain what we have now, how will we maintain more? The winter months should be used to formulate a plan for park improvements. City leaders need to speak up and insist Eagle Point Park is revived as a jewel on the Mississippi, or stop advertising that it is. BizBuzz, Galena Distillery celebrates 10 years. Plans expansion. Dubuque car dealer to expand. Retail store opens in Manchester. Story by Grace Nyland, grace.nyland@thmedia.com. BizBuzz shares business tidbits from the tri-state area. This edition highlights developments in Galena, Illinois, Dubuque, and Manchester, Iowa. Dateline, Galena, Illinois. Matt and Mike Blom have co-run Blom Brothers Distilling Company for just over a decade, but the brothers agree each day at the Galena Distillery still offers a chance to try something new. This spring, for example, the distillery will open the first of the barrels set aside when the company opened and sell its first batch of 10-year single malt whiskey, its oldest batch the distillery has made thus far. The higher age, the more desirable it is typically, said Matt Baum. After 10 years, a lot of the whiskey has evaporated, so you won't find as much whiskey in a 10-year barrel as one aged for 5 years. Blom Brothers Distilling recently celebrated its 10-year anniversary. In addition to whiskey, the distillery at 9380 West U.S. Highway 20 also crafts and sells other spirits such as bourbon, vodka, and gin. The distillery opened December 20th, 2013, after the Blom Brothers decided to open a business together around their shared interest in quality spirits. Previously, Mike worked for the federal government, and Matt worked in the healthcare field. Not many people can say they quit their day jobs to do something they love that they're still doing 10 years later, Mike Blom said. It's gone by so fast, but we couldn't have done it without support from the local community. The pair have become well-known in the distilling community for high-quality products. Customers have camped in the parking lot ahead of new releases and traveled from across the country for one bottle, Matt said. Moving forward, the pair looks to open Blom Brothers Public House on Galena's Main Street in March. The space will include room for additional programming and two bars with a menu of cocktails, full bottles, and some food. The distillery will continue to operate on US 20. Main Street has been a dream of ours from the beginning, Mike Blom said. It'll give us more opportunity as far as the types of fun things we can serve and experiences we can offer that we can't do right now in our current tasting room. Tours are available of the Blom Brothers Distillery at various times throughout the week. More information about those tours and the Blom Brothers Distilling Company can be found online at blombrothers.com. That's BLAUMBROS.com. Dubuque Car Dealership begins major renovation. A Dubuque car dealership is undergoing a multi-million-dollar renovation. Finan Kia at 4355 Dodge Street recently began work on the project, which dealership president April Rinnan Rink said by the end of the year will, quote, encompass the entire dealership, end quote. We're trying to change the perception of a car buying to be a quick, comfortable, and fun, Finan Rink said. I'm really excited about this project because it will a lot better allow us to meet the needs of our customer base. Finan Rink said the renovation was prompted by capacity constraints driven by increasing consumer demand. Those constraints are particularly tight in the service department, she said, which resurfaces new vehicles as well as returning customers. The renovation will expand the services and parts department, adding more hoist and dedicated workspace for electric vehicles. The project will also include an additional finance office, a new break room, improvements to the waiting area, and more. We're seeing more and more customers who are waiting with their vehicle during maintenance, or they'll bring phones or laptops, so we'll want to be able to accommodate that and offer a nice welcoming place for them to wait, Finan Rink said. The dealership will remain fully operational throughout the renovation. The sales department is open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday and Thursday, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, and from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday. The Parts and Services Department is open 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Calls can be directed to area code 563-583-8825. Woodworker opens retail space in Manchester. Carrie Tucker's new Delaware County business has been decades in the making. The Manchester-based artisan has honed his woodworking skills since he was a child, perfecting various cuts and corners and intertwining his projects with a personal preference for locally sourced or recycled materials. With the recent opening of Renewed Visions across the bridge, a new woodworking shop and retail space in Manchester, Tucker now can show those skills off literally. I put this big window between the retail area and the woodworking space because a lot of people don't know what all goes into making a solid piece of furniture, Tucker said. I wanted it to be sort of an experience where they could learn. Renewed Visions opened last month at 105 South Main Street and is owned by Tucker and his fiancée, Kelly Harbach. In addition to featuring Tucker's own work, the retail store also offers a variety of other items from over a dozen local vendors. One shelf is full of paintings, while another holds rows of candles and soap. Wooden stained furniture and shades from pale white to deep brown fill the store, while holding displays of handmade jewelry or pottery. Pretty much everything is made in Iowa, Tucker said. It was important to me to support local vendors and our own small-town community. The past month has proved fruitful, Tucker said, and the business has received a warm welcome from the Manchester community. Moving forward, Tucker plans to keep a good rotation of items in the store to ensure customers can always find something new and exciting. He also hopes to engage in community outreach and is considering hosting classes for area youth. I want to make something that offers something for every member of the community, he said. Creating that excitement and atmosphere has been awesome, and everyone who walks in the door has shared that feeling. Renewed Visions Across the Bridge is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday and 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday. More information on the store and Tucker's custom orders can be found online at renewed-visions.com. Business Tip Sots. Do you have an interesting story idea or news tip to share about a local business? Ideas can be shared with business reporter Grace Nyland at grace.nyland, that's N-I-E-L-A-N-D, at thmedia.com, or by calling her at 563-588-5647. Platteville asks public to avoid parking in streets to help plowing efforts. Dateline Platteville, Wisconsin. The city of Platteville is asking the public to avoid parking in streets today and the morning hours of Wednesday, January 10th, due to the winter storm. Street crews will face a more effective plowing process without parked cars, according to an online announcement. Platteville's winter parking regulations can be found online. Program on birds to be held in Guttenberg, Dateline Guttenberg, Iowa. Two free classes about birds and wildlife will be offered this month in Guttenberg. Katie Ibsen, founder of Avian Connections, will teach attendees facts about native birds and how to help local wildlife. Two birds will also be in attendance to help teach the course, which will be held at the Guttenberg Public Library, 603 South 2nd Street, according to an online event announcement. Man sentenced to probation for burglary at local school. A man has been sentenced to 2 to 5 years of probation for a burglary at Dubuque County School. Derek K. Bailey, 19, of Hopkinton, Iowa, recently received the deferred judgment from Iowa District Court Judge Monica Zrinyi Ackley in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty to charges of third-degree burglary and fourth-degree criminal mischief. Bailey also will pay a fine of $1,455 plus court costs. With the deferred judgment, the record of the case will be expunged if all probation obligations are met. Court documents state Bailey was one of two people who broke into the Drexler Middle School in Farley, Iowa on July 30th. Surveillance footage shows two people entering several classrooms and taking food and candy, documents state. Marcus J. Walker, 19, of Farley, also was charged with third-degree burglary and fourth-degree criminal mischief in connection with the incident. He has pleaded not guilty. Here is a look at local law enforcement reports. The Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Department reported. Jeremy B. Pidwinski, 32, of 820 Romberg Avenue, was arrested at 3:36 p.m. Sunday at his residence on charges of domestic assault with strangulation, domestic assault, 3 counts of child endangerment, and a warrant charging voluntary absence from custody. Court documents state that Pidwinski did not return to the state correctional facility at 1494 Elm Street on April 6. Dominic C. Coates, 41, of 2765 Pleasant View Drive, number 3203, was arrested at 12:16 p.m. Sunday in the 1200 block of Associates Drive on a charge of child endangerment. Luke J. Sanders, 29, of 17330 Gardner's Lane, number 3, was arrested at 11:43 p.m. Saturday at his residence on charges of second-degree harassment, second offense operating while intoxicated, possession of drug paraphernalia, and interference with official acts. Stacy L. Moots, 34, of 1045 Hawkeye Drive, was arrested at 8:44 p.m. Saturday in the 2700 block of Jackson Street on charges of assault and public intoxication. Dubuque to alter bus schedule, open parking ramps during expected winter storm. The city of Dubuque will alter the Jewel bus schedule and open its parking ramps for free due to the expected winter storm this week. Free parking in the 5th Street Ramp, Intermodal Ramp, Central Ramp, and Five Flags Ramp begins at 3 p.m. Monday and will run through 7 a.m. Tuesday, January 16th, according to a press release. Vehicles still in the ramp after that charge time will start being charged. The move is intended to encourage citizens to keep their cars off the street to facilitate easier snow removal for city crews. Meanwhile, the Jewel mini bus and fixed route services will operate on an on-call basis from 4:45 a.m. to 5 p.m. today, according to the release. On-call service will be available for riders needing to take essential trips on main roads with priority service for employment and non-emergency medical trips. Passengers are advised to call 563-589-4196 for more information or to set up an on-call trip. The release states that the Jewel plans to operate on its normal schedule on Wednesday, January 10th, provided road conditions improve. Dubuque Rescue Mission to provide daytime shelter during expected winter storm. The Dubuque Rescue Mission is opening its doors during the daytime to provide shelter from an expected winter storm. The facility will be open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. daily this week at 398 Main Street, according to an online announcement. The organization also opened its second floor dining hall for men who need a place to sleep at night. Additionally, the mission is opening a warming center at 1598 Jackson Street at 1 p.m. daily this week. Forecasters have issued a winter storm warning for the area. Heavy snow is expected through Wednesday morning. Iowa legislature starts session in shadow of school shooting. Story by Benjamin Fisher at benjaminfisher.teachmedia.com. Dateline Des Moines. As Republican leaders in the Iowa legislature began their 2024 session Monday, determined to continue their aggressive agenda of recent sessions, the shadow of the recent school shooting in Perry hung over the proceedings. It's numbed Iowa, Senator Kerry Kirkholker R. Dyersville told the Senate Telegraph Herald at the Iowa State Capitol on Monday. Speaking of the January 4th shooting that killed 11-year-old Amir Jalief and injured seven other students and staff, the Capitol was somber during many moments of the day, as the shooting was woven into speeches by each chamber's leaders. It's impossible to find words to appropriately convey the sorrow and sympathy we have to the victims of the shooting. But the people of Perry should know we share in their grief and support them at this time, said Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer R. Des Moines. Whitfer said the legislature, quote, cannot, quote, legislate away evil and propose no direct action in response. Kulker said she thought that choice was appropriate for now, at least until more details are understood about the Perry shooting. My thoughts and prayers are with them, she said. There are always things we need to look at as a legislature, but I don't know that a bill would have fixed that situation. People could turn to the legislature thinking that we can fix home and that we can fix mental illness. I step back and say, how can we increase funding and look at different children's mental health initiatives and patterns? But taking away guns, people are still going to get their hands on guns or knives or hammers. House Speaker Pat Grassley, R. New Hartford, mentioned some legislative efforts to come in a speech. In Iowa, every parent should be able to send their kids to school and trust that they will return home safe, he said. Our caucus talks a lot about keeping students safe. It means investing in school security. It means prioritizing school resource officers. It means protecting children's mental health. It means teaching resilience over victimhood, and it means ridding our classrooms and school libraries of inappropriate content. Iowa Representative Chuck Eisner, G.D. Dubuque, said he would wait for proposals before expecting too much of a legislative response to the Perry shooting. We're going to do something, he said of the House, but I don't know if we'll ever agree on whatever it is. And even if we do, I don't know how far it will go to actually solving the problem. Throughout the afternoon, several progressive nonprofit advocacy groups partnered with the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa and Action Fund and student organizers of March for Our Lives Iowa and gathered in the Capitol Rotunda for speeches and a demonstration. The groups called for gun control as a way to prevent more school shootings. Eisenhart and Iowa Representative Lindsey James, D. Dubuque, participated in the event. Senate Minority Leader Pam Yocum, D. Dubuque, spoke briefly as well. Though the shooting cast a pall over the Capitol, the legislators' Republican majority leaders also spoke much about Iowa being in the national spotlight during the session, both due to the upcoming First Nation Iowa caucuses and the Iowa legislature's consecutive recent years of conservative policymaking that have drawn national attention. Iowa's leadings and other states are looking to us, Kulker said. Other states call us and ask, how to get this stuff done? In particular, Iowa's recent education reforms, such as requiring schools to remove books that are not age-appropriate or that include depictions of a sex act or creating an education savings account that gives students public funds to pay for private school tuition were noted as putting Iowa on the map. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on Tuesday, January 9th, 2024 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. J.B. Jellison. J.B. Jellison, 66 of Dubuque, took the long, steep stairway to heaven on Friday, January 5th, 2024 at University of Iowa Hospital. Visitation will be from 3 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, January 11th at Eaglehoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, Dubuque, where there will be a prayer service at 6:30 p.m. Mass of Christian burial will be at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, January 12th at Sacred Heart Catholic Church, 2215 Windsor Avenue, Dubuque, and will be live streamed. Reverend Stephen Garner will officiate with Reverend Mark Osterhaus celebrating. Military honors will be accorded by the U.S. Navy and the Dubuque Marine Corps League. Jay was born May 10, 1957 in Dubuque, the son of Ted and Millie Newbar Jellison. He attended St. Mary's Grade School and Wallach High School after the Navy. After high school, he enlisted in the U.S. Navy and served for 20 years until his retirement as an internal communications electrician first class. He married the pride and joy of his life, Mary Kay Spahn, on February 27, 1982 at Sacred Heart Catholic Church. Jay loved so many things in life, especially music. He played lead guitar in the popular local band Deep Sage in his younger years and continued to play and collect guitars until the very end. He enjoyed woodworking, 3D printing, and helping his family with any project he could. He was an avid fan of the Chicago Cubs and could recite every line from every episode of the show MASH. Seafood, especially red lobster, was his favorite. Hello, endless shrimp and lobster. Jay loved animals, cared for pets of many kinds. He was a devoted husband, father, grandfather, brother, and uncle, and loved spending time with his family. Those left to carry on his memory include the apple of his eye, Mary Kay, his beloved brown dogs, Cubby and Wrigley, his children, Nicole Scott Herrick, Brian Jellison, and Matthew Heather Jellison, and his grandchildren, and many other relatives. He was preceded in death by his parents, Ted and Millie Joe, and other relatives. Jay's family would like to thank his many healthcare providers, including the nurses and medical associates, Dr. Chad Nachman, Dr. Ramananju, John Ramabhadran, and the doctors and nurses at the University of Iowa Hospital, especially his nurse, Taylor R. Fair winds and following seas, J.B. Dahl. Dean A. Olson. Dean A. Olson, age 94 of Dubuque, passed away peacefully at 11:25 p.m. Friday, January 5, 2024 at Stonehill Health Center. To honor Dean's life, there will be a celebration of his life held at a later date. Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, is assisting Dean's family. He was born July 28, 1929 in Park Rapids, Minnesota, the son of C. Axel and Pearl Sutliffe Olson. Family moved to Marathon, Iowa in 1945. He graduated from North Central School of Agriculture at the University of Minnesota. In 1949, he honorably served his country with the U.S. Navy during the Korean War as a baker on the troop transport USS Rock Bridge. After his return, he began farming part-time for a number of years in Marathon while working at the Farmers Co-op and doing construction. He was last employed at Wilson Foods in Cherokee, Iowa from 1966 until his retirement in 1991. He was united in marriage to Lois Beck in 1957, and they had three sons together before parting ways. He later married Dorothy Bell in 1986, but she would sadly pass away in 2011. Dean was very devoted to his Methodist faith and the American Legion, always joining the local church and chapter no matter what town he was living in. He liked being active and was an avid BMW motorcycle rider in his 40s and 50s. He was also a talented woodworker and has created several beautiful pieces throughout the years. In his later years, Dean enjoyed gardening and doing volunteer work. He had an agreeable personality and was always willing to help out when asked. Dean has lived a very full life and has seen countless changes throughout the years. He will be deeply missed. Those left to cherish his memory include his three sons, Tim Chris Happ Olson, Dubuque, Greg Chris Montgomery Olson, Columbia, Missouri, and Brad Carla Finn Olson, Des Moines, I have grandchildren, three great-grandchildren, his siblings, his former wife, Lois Olson Dubuque, and many nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by his parents, his wife, Dorothy Olson, and other relatives. His family would like to thank the nurses and staff at Stonehill, Assisi Village, and Hospice of Dubuque for their kindness and compassionate care. Family will thankfully receive your support through greeting cards and memorials and deeds of memory, which may be mailed to Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, Dubuque, Iowa. Attention Dean Olson family. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.bearfuneralhome.com. Tammy R. Scott, Deadline, Belmont, Wisconsin. Tammy R. Ohms Scott, 64, Belmont, Wisconsin, Farm Life Skills, Mound, Illinois, passed away on Friday, January 5th, 2024, at home. Family and friends may call from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, January 10th, 2024, at the Miller-Steinke Funeral Home in Scales Mound, and after 10 a.m. Thursday at the Scales Mound United Methodist Church, where funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Thursday. Burial is at the Scales Mound Township Cemetery. Tammy was born August 18, 1959, in Hazel Green, Wisconsin, the daughter of Herman L. and Carol M. Wills Ohms. She was a graduate of Scales Mound High School, the class of 1978. She was united in marriage to Bill Scott on September 29, 1979, in Scales Mound United Methodist Church, and the family farmed for many years near Schulzburg. They later divorced. She enjoyed fishing and spoiling her grandchildren. She was employed at Farm and Fleet in Plattsville, Wisconsin, for the past 20 years. Surviving are her three children, Angela Heinze of Dyersville, Iowa, Laura Scott, Richard Reyes of Madison, Wisconsin, and Alex Jamie Scott of Schulzburg, Wisconsin, her five grandchildren, her sister, nieces and nephews, and her former husband, Bill Scott. She was preceded in death by her father, Herman, and a special friend, Dino. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.millerfhed.com. Ruth Ann Nemers. Ruth Ann Nemers, 84, of Dubuque, died on Saturday, January 6, 2024. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, January 12th at Eaglehof Seagard and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2695 John F. Kennedy Road. Massive Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, January 13th at St. Patrick's Catholic Church. Shirley M. Mosier, Dateline, Guttenberg, Iowa. Shirley M. Mosier, 91, of Guttenberg, died Monday, January 1, 2024. A visitation will be from 9 to 10:15 a.m. Saturday, January 13th at St. John's Lutheran Church in Guttenberg, where services will follow at 10:30 a.m. Burial will follow in the Guttenberg City Cemetery. Morris Funeral Home of Guttenberg is assisting the family. Austin L. Wiest. Deadline, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Austin L. Wiest, 23, of Lancaster, died Friday, January 5th, 2024. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, January 10th, at Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Lancaster. Burial will be private. William Harry. William Harry, 80, of Dubuque, died Saturday, January 6, 2024. Visitation will be from 1 to 3:15 p.m. Thursday, January 11th, at Hoffenschneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory, 3860 Asbury Road, where services will follow. Ruth Cruiser, Dateline, Hazel Green, Wisconsin. Ruth Cruiser, 88, of Hazel Green, died Sunday, January 7, 2024. Arrangements are pending. Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City is assisting the family. Philip M. McLeod, Dateline, Galena, Illinois. Philip M. McLeod, 74, of Galena, died Saturday, December 30th, 2023. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Tri-State Cremation Center of East Dubuque is assisting the family. Patricia A. Trowbridge. Patricia A. Trowbridge, 62, of Dubuque, died Friday, December 29, 2023. Private services were held. Bear Funeral Home of Dubuque is assisting the family. Beverly J. Kubaszewski. Beverly J. Kubaszewski, 96, of Dubuque, died Friday, January 5, 2024, at the Stonehill Care Center in Dubuque. Visitation will be from 9 a.m. until 10:15 a.m. Wednesday, January 10, 2024, at St. Anthony Catholic Church. The Mass of Christian Burial for Beverly will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday, January 10, 2024, at St. Anthony Catholic Church, with Father Stephen Rozanki as the celebrant. Burial will be at Mount Olivet Cemetery in Key West. Beverly was born January 23, 1927 in Omaha, the daughter of Lowell and Dorothy Dart Martin. On September 17, 1949, she married Robert F. Bob Kubaszewski at the Church of the Nativity in Dubuque. He preceded her in death on January 9, 2007. Beverly graduated from high school in Fernville, Michigan, and attended Clark College in Dubuque for 2 years. She was employed at the Telegraph Herald for 3 years, then as a computer typesetter at Antique Trader Publishing for 23 years, retiring in 1992. She was a member of St. Anthony Catholic Church, where she was involved with the Altar Society and Rosary Society, as well St. Joseph's Circle. She enjoyed reading, playing piano, and playing euchre and bridge. Most of all, she enjoyed being with her family. Survivors included 4 children, Kathy Ron Stark of Asbury, Sue Jones of Dubuque, Jean Jones of Dubuque, and Mike Connie Kubaszewski of Coconut Creek, Florida. 9 grandchildren, 2 step-grandchildren, other relatives. Besides her parents and husband, Beverly was preceded in death by 2 sons-in-laws, a sister, Carolyn, step-great-grandson, Devin, and other relatives. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Clark College or St. Anthony Catholic Church. The family would like to extend a special thank you to the staffs at Assisi Village and Stonehill Care Center Hospice of Dubuque, and especially Diane and Dr. Andrea Rise for their compassion and care. Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory is in charge of the arrangements. Condolences can be sent to the family by visiting her obituary at www.hskfhcares.com. Here's information about area funeral services. Mary Ann M. Burbach, Dubuque. Visitation 9 to 10:45 a.m. today. Resurrection Catholic Church. Massive Christian burial 11 a.m. today at the church. Stephen K. Kane, Muscatine, Iowa. Visitation 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, January 13th. Egelhoff, Siegert, and Chris and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, service 1 p.m. Saturday at the funeral home. John J. Check, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. today. Garrity Funeral Home, Prairie du Chien, Massive Christian Burial, 11 a.m. January 10th, St. Gabriel's Catholic Church, Prairie du Chien. John W. Dias, Andrew, Iowa. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, January 12th, Hockmeyer and Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Bellevue. David M. Fenske, North Aurora, Illinois. Visitation 9 to 10 a.m. today, Law Jones Funeral Home, Savannah. Service 10 a.m. today at the funeral home. Janet E. Kramer, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, Memorial Gathering, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thursday, January 11th, Thornburg, Growl Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Prairie du Chien, service 1 p.m. Thursday at the funeral home. William L. Cruz, Guttenberg, Iowa, service 10 a.m. today, Morris Funeral Home, Guttenberg. Diane K. Lahr, Worthington, Iowa, visitation 3 to 7 p.m. today, Rife Funeral Home, Dyersville, Massive Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, January 10th, St. Francis Xavier Basilica, Dyersville. Herbert M. P. Recker, Dyersville, Iowa, visitation 9 to 10 a.m. today, Kramer Funeral Home, Dyersville. Massive Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. today, St. Francis Xavier Basilica, Dyersville. Clara Strang, Dubuque. Service, 10:30 a.m. Friday, January 12th, Clara House Chapel, Mount St. Francis Center. Rose M. Wolf, Cascade, Iowa. Visitation, 9 to 10:30 a.m. Saturday, January 13th, St. Martin Catholic Church, Cascade Rosary Service, 10:30 a.m. Saturday at the church. Service 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Here's an obituary for Roretta Fries, Dateline Hazel Green, Wisconsin. Roretta Fries, 97 of Hazel Green, died Saturday, January 26th. Private services will be held. Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City is assisting the family. Charles E. Hawkins, Dateline Cascade, Iowa. Charles Chuck E. Hawkins, 80 of Cascade, died Saturday, January 6th. 2024. Visitation will be held from 3 to 8 p.m. Friday, January 12th at Rye Funeral Home. Cascade services will take place at 1:30 p.m. Saturday, January 13th at Cascade Community Presbyterian Church. Burial will be in the Cascade Community Cemetery. Teresa J. Martin, Dateline Monona, Iowa. Teresa Terry Jean Martin, 63, of Winona, died Friday, January 5th. Celebration of Life will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday, January 13th at Leonard Ground Funeral Home in Winona, where services will follow. Interment will take place at a later date. Thomas S. Paulus, Tom, Dateline Platteville, Wisconsin. Thomas S. Paulus, 64, Platteville, died Saturday, January 6, 2024. A visitation will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. Friday, January 12th at Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Platteville. There will be no services. Here's a column by Benjamin Fisher at benjamin.fisher@teachmedia.com. Politics, Iowa caucus crunch, time brings campaign rhetoric local. This is dated December 31. As the first in the nation, Iowa caucuses get drawn near, Republican presidential candidates and their supporters have returned to sharing Iowa-specific messaging, which has, in general, been less common this cycle than those in the past. In most recent Iowa caucus cycles, most visiting presidential candidates were consistent in focusing their campaigns on issues of particular importance to Iowa, courting the support of farmers and their biofuel sectors with events at ethanol plants, touring John Deere plants and making promises to employees, etc. But while this year candidates have certainly spent a lot of time in Iowa and have been publicly eating what is probably more than their typical share of pork tenderloin sandwiches, area political science experts have commented to the Telegraph Herald about how much more candidates are talking about national issues rather than state-specific topics. During her stop at the Holiday Inn in downtown Dubuque, for example, Nikki Haley sprinkled mentions of the state's name and industries throughout her speech. They brought the largest pork producer in country right here in Iowa. They bought the largest pork producer in the country right here in Iowa, she said, during her promise to be harder on China than Democratic President Joe Biden or former President Donald Trump. If any of you are worried about the business Iowa does with China, for all the farmers here in Iowa who do business there, that is why we will rebuild. As president, just like a governor, you sell your product. We will take that product from China and we'll give it to countries that want to be our friends. Haley also paid a lot of compliments to Republican Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds, despite Reynolds' endorsement of Haley's rival, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. I've known Kim a long time, she said. She's been a great governor. I know that she endorsed Ron, and it was a great get for him. I have tremendous respect for Kim Reynolds. In an interview with the Telegraph Herald after her event, she also promised to make the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers more efficient in its management of shipping on the Mississippi River if elected. There are things we need to do to speed it up, she said of the agencies. I think if you're costing a person or business time, you're costing them money. I think the states know that if they need something, the longer they have to wait, the more expensive it becomes. Any federal agency or group should support the economy of states, the infrastructure of states, should support the taxpayer of the states. Earlier this month, both DeSantis and Texas preacher and businessman Ryan Binkley celebrated crossing a checkpoint with what is perhaps the state's most peculiar measurement, a full grassley, meaning campaigning at all 99 of Iowa's counties made famous by longtime U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, outdoing those presidential candidate, biotech entrepreneur, and author Vivek Ramaswamy boasted that he will land a double grassley, visiting every county more than once in a year, at a stop scheduled in Maquoka on Tuesday. The recent retraining of campaign rhetoric on Iowa showed no signs of slowing ahead of the January 15th caucuses. Non-Iowans at pre-caucus events. A familiar face from across the Mississippi River was caught in the crowd at Haley's event in Dubuque on Friday. Wisconsin Representative Travis Trunell, our Cuba City. Trunell, who graduated from Waller High School in Dubuque, has long luxuriated in his proximity to Iowa during the lead-up to the caucuses. If you like politics at all, this is so cool, he told the Telegraph Herald. Where else and when else are you going to have this kind of access if you're a farmer? Trunell, a Republican, was also an observer at the Dubuque Democratic Party caucus in 2020 as a guest of Iowa Representative Chuck Eisenhower, D. Dubuque. Jake Boone, a truck driver from Indianapolis, Indiana, also attended the DeSantis stop in Dubuque just before Christmas. He told the Telegraph Herald that caucus visits had become a tradition for him over the years. If I can squeeze it in, I'll check my route and see if I can catch anyone when I'm in Iowa, he said. I did it in 2015, two ahead of the 2016 caucus. Saw Ted Cruz. Hoosiers don't get this kind of attention. Wisconsin Republicans denounce map decision. Tranel also shared some thoughts and plans for his party's response to the Wisconsin Supreme Court's finding that the state's legislative maps were illegal and would have to be restored. He said he thought his constituents had more important things on their mind right now, but that state Republicans did have some plans in progress. Dubuque School Board approves contracts for Lincoln Playground Preschool Center projects. Story by Elizabeth Kelsey, elizabeth.kelsey@thmedia.com. Lincoln Elementary School students will see a new playground when they return from summer vacation this year. Dubuque Community School Board members on Monday unanimously approved a $694,000 contract with Tricon Construction for the playground replacement project at Lincoln, which will install new play equipment, walking path, and more. The project will be funded through grants obtained by the City of Dubuque and Lincoln's Parent Family Group. This is a great partnership that we have with the City of Dubuque, and I really appreciate Principal Megan Elsinger, who wrote some extra grants to make sure that we could get this fully funded, said Superintendent Amy Hawkins during the meeting. It's going to be a great project, not just for our school district, but for our community. Board documents state that work on the project will begin in June and be substantially completed on or before August 9th. The district initially planned to have the playground ready for the start of the 2023-2024 school year, but additional time was needed to coordinate funding with the city, according to district's buildings and grounds manager, Rob Powers. We need to step back and make sure we got all the paperwork and processes in order, he said. Powers said the city is funding 90% of the project costs, with remaining dollars coming from grants secured by Lincoln officials as well as some district funds. Both the playground for preschool students and the older kids will be changed out, and we are relocating the basketball hoops and are installing a walking track around the green space, he said. Along the track, there will be areas where, if school officials want to add standalone play equipment in the future, they can do that. School board members praised the project during their meeting, particularly the district's partnership with the city. It's great seeing this come together, said Board President Katie Parks. Also at the meeting, the board unanimously approved a $1.8 million construction contract with Sheets General Construction for a preschool center the district plans to open in the fall. The district intends to construct the preschool center in a portion of the building at 7900 Chavanel Road, which Dubuque Initiatives purchased in 2022 from Medline. Another section of the building houses a child care center operated by the Dubuque Community Y that opened Monday, and the remaining portion will be shared between the City of Dubuque and Dubuque County for a 9/11 operations center. The school district's plans to buy the approximately 15,000 square feet of building that it will use for the preschool center. The center will provide space for up to 10 classrooms, though the district will still maintain one preschool classroom at each of its elementary schools. Dubuque still months out from activation of its license plate reader system. Story by John Cruz at thmedia.com. 5 months after its approval, Dubuque officials said more time is needed before a citywide license plate reader system is operational. City staff are working with the vendor Flock Safety to secure the necessary permit from the Iowa Department of Transportation to install cameras along the major highways that cut through the city. Once online, the system will use the cameras to record and track license plate data of vehicles that pass through Dubuque. Police say they will aid in criminal investigations and help authorities find wanted vehicles. Dubuque City Council members in August approved an operating policy for a license plate reader system. At the time, Dubuque Police Chief Jeremy Jensen said the city would negotiate a contract with Flock Safety, after which the system would take about 8 weeks to get up and running. Jensen could not be reached for comment Monday, but Assistant City Engineer Bob Scheisel said it could be at least another 3 months before the system is active. It's going to take some time before we have the permit in place and do all the approvals we need to do the install. Officials plan to install 22 cameras at major intersections and entrances into the city. Dubuque Police Department Lieutenant Brennan Wall said the camera locations are designed to monitor the city's major exits and entrances. Our hope in using Flock to its most potential would be for the cameras to be installed on entering and exit points for the city and the state of Iowa, Welch said. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, January 9th, 2024. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iraradioreading.org, at any time. Thank you for listening.